Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello and welcome back. It is an absolute pleasure to be speaking to you again after nearly a month away. As ever, I am still your host, Connor Clancy, and you are listening to the Forza Italian Football Podcast, the only Italian football podcast brought to you from inside Italy. Joining me, I have my new trusty duo in Vito Doria and Kevin Pogorzelski. Vito, first, welcome back. I hope you're feeling well after your recent illness.
Yeah, glad to be back on, and I was a bit worried that I might not make this one, but fortunately moving it to Monday night European time and Tuesday morning Australian time, I think it's helped a lot. And yeah, it was a tough break for me, but hopefully, you know, we can get things back to normal.
It's good to have you back on your feet, and we told the listeners that it was because Milan and Juve played on Monday night, but in reality, Vito, I pushed the pod back for you. You get the special.
Thank you, Connor.
In truth, I just didn't want to be left alone with the next guy. Kev, it's a pleasure. Hello.
Hi, Connor. Glad to be back.
Yeah, how was your Christmas? You had an eventful time, didn't you?
Yeah, it was very nice. It was very sunny, and I'm back a little bit bronzed than everybody else in the UK.
You say bronzed. It's mainly a shade of pink or red that I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, I'm always a little red.
I can't really speak. I'm the palest person to ever grace the FIF pod, so it's best that I don't say too much. But guys, we are here for a reason, I think, and that reason is Italian football's back. So guys, are you delighted? Are you as delighted as I am to have Italian football back?
Yeah, well, we had a little bit of Coppa Italia during the week as well, so it was sort of eased us in nicely.
You say that, but you weren't sent off to Bologna and then to Milan for two games that nobody cared about. That game in Bologna, was that last week, it was tough. It was a terrible match. Everyone knew what the result was going to be, and it was really, really cold. I've never struggled to type so much in my life. I was going like one finger at a time. But San Siro is always nice to go to. Even though there were no fans, they still pulled out all the stops in the press room and fed us quite well, so I was happy. But this week I was treated, but we won't get into that just now. I think we will start with... Right, let's go. The biggest game of the weekend was Napoli 2, Lazio 1. I should probably more accurately say Napoli's B team 2, Lazio 1. And... we'll start with Lazio. We don't really speak about them as much as perhaps we should, but this is an example of maybe why that's the case, because they keep coming up short against the big teams. They came up against the Napoli side, who were they without? Koulibaly, Hamsik, Alan, Insigne, and Mertens as well. And Mertens played. Okay, Mertens played. Inzaghi said the day before that this was an opportunity that Lazio had to take advantage of, given that Napoli were missing players. And Kev, they didn't do it.
No, they didn't. And they looked as though they were showing signs of getting back to form just before Christmas. Maybe the break came at the wrong sort of time for them. Milinkovic-Savic finally looked like he was starting to find some form. But they do just have this tendency at the moment to lay down their arms when faced with slightly better opposition.
Why is that? And who should be held accountable for that? Because Inzaghi needs to take responsibility for that, surely.
He does. I'm not sure if they were lacking a bit of steel in the first few months of the season. I noticed Lucas had been out, and I wondered where he was. I must admit, not watching Lazio that often, I wasn't sure if it was Inzaghi that wasn't picking him, but he seems to have come straight back into the side, and then that sort of coincided with their improvement. He was also voted, I think, over Christmas of their player of 2018 by their fans. So I think it shows how important they think he is to the side.
We did have a piece go up over Christmas about Lucas on ForzaItalianFootball.com, which described him as the anchor of their midfield, which he really is. He's so important in that side. Vito, what do you think about the whole Lazio situation? Because obviously in 30 of 38 games in the season, they're really, really good. But then for the eight that really matter, they rarely deliver.
It must be a psychological issue because they do look good against the smaller sides, and for some reason against the bigger ones, they tend to either just panic or they look less inspiring. What I noticed about this game is once again, Inzaghi sort of went back to his old formational methods, and he had started with Luis Alberto, but he had Joaquin Correa on the bench. And I reckon Lazio are better off when both of them are on the field at the same time. And when Immobile scored that goal, that came from a Correa pass. So, you know, it goes to show that even though Inzaghi in his mind might have wanted to really make the most of Napoli's absentees, I think he should have done better in that aspect by having a far more attacking side, even though the game was in Naples.
Given what else happened this weekend as well, it's a very, very costly defeat for them because they're now below both Milan and Roma and just 1 point ahead of Atalanta and two ahead of Samp. So it's very, very tight there, and you need to take these chances when they come, and not many teams will have the luxury of playing Napoli with the bulk of their squad or the bulk of their usual starting 11 missing. But we won't go into it too much, but this was just another example for me of Napoli proving that they have that depth that they were accused of not having last season. Kev, the two goal scorers on the day, Arek Milik and Jose Callejon, are two of arguably Serie A's most underrated players, definitely two of the most underrated players in the top six.
I think Callejon certainly. I tweeted after he'd scored the first goal, and it's just where he seems to pop up regularly with those really important strikes or assists, and just kind of goes unnoticed among the flair of maybe your Mertens or your Insigne, and he's been there. Are we coming on to 5 years now? I think you could argue that he was the most important of that sort of flurry of signings under Benitez when he came in that summer. I know Albiol's still there, but Reina's gone, and as for Milik, hopefully we're now seeing him start to really kick on after the injuries that he had last season.
Yeah, well, in terms of longevity, Callejon has been excellent. Like you say, Albiol's still there, but he's not always been performing at the level that Callejon has. Vito, why do you think it is that the Spaniard doesn't quite get the praise that, say, Mertens and Insigne get? Because so often last season we saw them do that very same move where Insigne would cut in, play a ball over to the right for Callejon, who would get in behind the last defender, and he scored important goals for them.
I don't think his goals are perhaps as outrageous as the ones Mertens and Insigne scores, and he perhaps doesn't have the same flair. Compared to those two, he's more or less a workhorse, And he's more about his effectiveness than his flair or trickery. That being said, you can even say that he's probably against the stereotype of what Spanish players have become in the last 10 to 15 years, especially with the golden generation. There are so many players in midfield and on the wings who just have great skills on the ball and all that. I'm not saying Callejon is a talentless player, but in comparison to other Spaniards or in comparison to his Napoli teammates, he's more just that guy that just gets the job done. And that's perhaps the main reason why he doesn't get the plaudits that he deserves.
He is quite bizarre in that, isn't he? Because technically he's very good. His work rate is, for me, it's up there with the likes of Mario Mandzukic, who gets praised every week for his performances and his effort. I think with Callejon, one thing that lets him down quite often is his decision-making. He doesn't always choose the right pass. He can be a little bit reckless in possession sometimes, and I do think that can really stand against him. Kev, I was speaking to a Polish journalist over the break, and he was asking me questions about Arek Milik in relation to his market value this winter, and if he were to move on, how much would he go for? And he was pushing me to compare him to Krzysztof Piątek. And I'm quite intrigued to see what you two think about this. Vito, I will come to you first, actually. But Milik always does it when he plays. He's had terrible fortune with injuries. But whenever he has been consistently fit, he's been fantastic. And I made the point that I think his technical ability often gets overlooked just because he's big. He's a big guy who can do that job for you. But his goal against Atalanta this season is the perfect evidence to just how good technically he is. So I guess in a long-winded way, my question is, how do you think that Milik stands up to some of Poland's other great strikers? Like we've seen Lewandowski in Germany and Piątek now as well.
Oh, he's definitely up there with them. And goes to show that Poland, they're producing some really good centre forwards at the moment. I must admit, I'm not overly familiar with the whole Polish youth system and I don't follow the Polish league. But to have this abundance of strikers, I think it's a very good thing for them. And Milik, I think also at his age now, around 24, 25, I think he's close to reaching the peak of his career. And you know, it's up to the Polish national team coach, Wojciech. I'm not sure how to say his surname, but if he can utilize him, that would be fantastic and give him the right service because they definitely got the firepower, Poland, and Milik, he can contribute to that. I just think without turning this too much into a national team issue, I think they need more than Zielinski in midfield. That's probably why they struggled in the Nations League and all that.
Okay, good. Right, that will do it for that game. We've been on it for quite a while. Next, you guys can rest because I am going to speak for our audio listeners to Dov Schiavone in Turin, where he was at Juventus 3, Kiev 0-0. Okay, so I am now joined by Dov Schiavone from the Juventus Stadium in Turin. Dov, another comfortable win for Juve. Was it just a case of business as usual there?
Hello, Connor. I hope you're doing well. Basically, your first question, another comfortable win for Juve. Yes, it was pretty comfortable, 3-0. And to be honest, it could have been 4 or 5, if not for Sorrentino, but we'll come to him later. I think it was interesting the way Cable lined up, actually, because they almost did a Zeman. They had, I think, about 8 players along the halfway line at kickoff, and they had the first chance of the game. Maggiorini made Perin make a good save, but I mean, after that, I mean, Juventus were quite comfortable, especially after Douglas Costa scored, I think it was 13 minutes in, and kind of from there, like, you didn't really think, hey, well, we're going to get back into it, and that was essentially the case. Up until after that point, I think maybe there was one or two good chances they had in the second half. I think it was Maggiorini had a chance of a free header. I mean, that was about it, to be honest, in terms of Cable creating chances. It's not like they were bad. It was more just that the Juve are just better Which, when you've got a team that's on 8 points at the bottom of Serie A, that's going to happen when you've got another team who are just an absolute winning machine. So, again, it was business as usual. And I think, like, as has been the case at every single Juve match this season, if they wanted to step up a gear, they pretty much could.
Yeah, well, they did that today, despite not playing with all of their usuals in the team. Daniele Rugani played. He got himself on the score sheet, and he's become something of a forgotten man in Turin. Do you think he has any hope of establishing himself under Allegri, or is it in his best interests to move elsewhere?
Well, Rugani got himself on the score sheet, like you mentioned, his first goal this season, the first goal for Douglas Costa, and the first goal of the season for Emre Can. So it was a day of firsts, if you like, and Ronaldo missed his first penalty as well. and that kind of brings Juve's goal scorers up to 14 players in the team that have scored, which kind of, I think I mentioned in my video after the game, that this is something that could help Juve in the Champions League as well, because if they become overly dependent on Ronaldo, it'll be a case of, if Ronaldo doesn't score, then who gets the goals, kind of thing. Say you've got Mandzukic out, you may be struggling a little bit, but if they can kind of spread some goals around the team from midfield, from defence as well, and some of the other forward players, getting in amongst the goals, I mean, that can only help them. And Serie A doesn't really make a difference, because they could play anybody up front, and have done in previous years with like some Matri and Vucinic and whoever else, and won the league, and that'll be the case this season as well. They can play whoever they've got and they win the league. But it's more a case in the Champions League, where if you've got a team like Atletico Madrid who could take Ronaldo out of the game, then if you've got Douglas Costa and Emre Can and whoever else scoring goals instead of Ronaldo, then that's only a positive. In terms of Rugani establishing himself, I think his time in Turin and at Juve has been a massive disappointment. He's not really kicked on as everybody thought he would, and because Benassia essentially wants to leave, because he's not getting enough playing time, Rugani's getting a chance in the team. And he played well tonight. Allegri thought he played well, and to be fair, he did. But when you're up against Majorini and Pulisic, it's a bit different than when you come up against Messi and Griezmann and whoever else. So more game time is good for him, and if he keeps playing like this, then that's good for him as well. But I don't think when it comes to the big games, he's going to be one of the first names on the team sheet.
I never thought I would hear the day when you would talk down Kiev's frontline, particularly Sergio Pulisic, though. That man is the love of your life. Another one of your life's loves is Stefano Sorrentino, who, it won't come as a surprise to anyone who watches him regularly, was fantastic despite being pumped. Go on, sing his praises.
What else can we say about Stefano Sorrentino? The guy is an absolute legend. First game of the season against Juve, he was fantastic. And it's not as if this is something new. I mean, it's something we've been talking about for years and years. I mean, he's almost 40 years old, and he still can pull off amazing reactions. Say, I mean, the one that he did against Alexandro, which I think it was maybe 3 or 4 yards out, headed into the ground, Sorrentino managed, I don't know how he managed to do it, but he managed to do it. And for a guy who is that old to have the reactions that he does is just amazing. He should be Italy's number one goalkeeper. I mean, it's something that I would advocate he should be in the squad, because I mean, if Serie A is getting in the squad, for me, Sorrentino's a better goalkeeper than the likes of Serie A who gets in the squad, and that's the end of story. Sorrentino should be there. Sorrentino is a fantastic, fantastic goalkeeper. And even when you're coming up against Juve, and obviously Kiev's outfield players are nowhere near as good as Juve's, and he can sometimes make the difference. And obviously tonight he didn't make the difference, but I mean, you can't really say the goals were his fault. I mean, Rugani was in acres of space for that one. So, I mean, as long as he puts it away from the goalkeeper, then that's a goal. Douglas Costa's one was fantastic. And Emre Can, I mean, what do you expect him to do there? It's a brilliantly placed shot. I mean, and then obviously saved Ronaldo's penalty. I think Di Carlo said in his press conference afterwards that he studies Ronaldo. So he obviously does his homework and knows that this is what Ronaldo's going to do if a penalty comes up. So, I mean, what else can you say about the guy? He's absolutely brilliant. And obviously, if Kiev do go down the season, which it looks like they probably will, he'll be sorely missed in Serie A. So, yeah, he should get much more praise. And I think the thing as well, and I think it was our good friend Adam Digby said on Twitter during the game that it doesn't get the praise he deserves because people only watch him three times a season against the big teams. And this is the thing, it's not just against the big teams that he does this. He does this week in, week out. And I think even already this season, he's been in the Forza Dai Football Team of the Week, chosen by Verica Preta like two or three times. And even last season, he was in it like three or four times as well. So this is something that he does consistently well in terms of like winning. He almost wins games, or not wins games, but gets KO points where they shouldn't get points in matches as well. So Sonnentino's amazing, and that's just a bit, I was not sad, but it's a bit sad that he didn't maybe go to a bigger team to get some, or to get the recognition he deserves, because obviously we know how good he is, and everybody who listens to this knows how good he is. So there you go. Right, that is everything from me from the Allianz Stadium, because it's late and I'm getting kicked out. So thank you everybody for listening, and there's nothing left for me to say apart from arrivederci.
Thanks, Dov. I love Stefano Sorrentino too, by the way. I did put him into my Serie A top 30 performers for 2018, so there you go. Anyway, back to Vito and Kev. And now we will move on then to Inter Sassuolo. A nice scoreless draw in front of 11,000 children at the Stadio Giuseppe Meazza. And it will come as a surprise to very, very few people that Inter were lacking in creativity. Vito, that need for a number 10 continues.
Absolutely. And one of the other rumours coming through this January is that Mesut Ozil from Arsenal is another player linked with Inter. I don't know how strong those rumours are or what the realistic chances of Inter getting him are, but he's another type of player that can sort of add some extra unpredictability in the midfield, provide killer passes, and with his dribbling and vision, I think if Inter were to get him somehow, it would be a fantastic asset. I think, in a way, I'd probably rather go for him than, say, Luka Modric, who they've dreamt about, but the chances of him arriving at Inter are looking lower and lower.
Kev, do you think that someone like Ozil could work under Luciano Spalletti? Because we know what he likes his teams to do, and I'm not quite sure that Ozil fits.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Ozil would do under Spalletti at Inter. But I always feel a little bit disappointed with Spalletti and Inter at the moment. They've missed that creativity for so long. And if you think about the team he had at Roma when he was effectively strikerless and he played Totti, it was almost that 4-6-0 formation. I expected him to be able to think outside of the box while Inter sort of continue on this cycle of not bringing in the right type of player, who's making the decisions there regarding the recruitment, because, you know, they brought Politano in, but plays more off the wing and hasn't really done it yet. And I think if you're hamstrung as a coach with regards to what you've actually got to use, then you need to sort of be a little bit more creative with how you set the team up. And they're just not doing it. You know, at no stage, I think, should Sassuolo, as well as they've done this season, go to Inter and create more chances than them. You know, both sides were pretty woeful in front of goal on Saturday.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I know you said that Sassuolo created more than them, but, I mean, Sassuolo did have the Prince playing, which they won't have for much longer, so they're always going to create more than anyone they come up against. But sticking with Inter, they did play with a different setup in the Coppa Italia last week when I was at the game against Benevento. The first half, they lined up with a 4-4-2. Lautaro and Icardi played up top together, and Spalletti was critical of it in his post-match press conference, but I thought it worked quite nicely. The two showed a decent understanding. They complemented each other's skill set quite nicely. Icardi was, as you would expect, the main focal point. Lautaro was more willing to do the runs into the channels on both sides. He was coming deep for the ball when he needed. And then in the second half, Icardi went off. Lautaro went up top on his own. And he worked there too. But then yesterday, on Sunday, whenever it was, they it was Saturday, they reverted back to the 4-2-3-1, and they're lacking.
Do you think that's Spalletti appeasing the fans a little? You know, let's face it, they should have beaten Benevento. So they call for Martinez to be played up front with Icardi, and he does it for that game. He then criticises it, says it doesn't work, and then he can go back in the league to what is his tried and tested formation with the players he's got.
I think that's probable, yeah, because really, if he was going to be critical of the 4-4-2, I think he would have needed to play it in another game to be critical of it. He played it for 45 minutes. They won 3-0 in that 45-minute spell. When they reverted back to a 4-2-3-1, the game, what, that's finished 6-2. So they scored another 3 goals, but they conceded twice. I don't really understand what his problem was, because Lautaro was more impressive than Icardi, even in the 45 minutes when the two played together. So it does seem like he's just determined to stick to this 4-2-3-1 and just hope that something sticks eventually. We've seen João Mário come back into the team. Okay, he's got talent, but is he really the answer to their problems? I'm not so sure. We've seen Politano, he's impressed from the right. Perisic hasn't been himself this season. And something needs to change. And like you said, at Roma, he showed that he had this creativity. Or possibly he inherited players who had been trained to be creative and versatile by the great Zeman. It's hard to know what Spalletti is going to do here, because I don't know. We're back into that frustrating situation of not knowing what success is for Inter this season. Because they'll finish in the Champions League places, regardless of what happens between now and the end of the season. And I don't know. You'd think Spalletti could just try something, just see what works, because he's got players there to make it a little bit interesting. And I don't know. It's frustrating from a neutral perspective that Inter are just continuing along this well-trodden road. But we will move on from that, I think. Where better to go than the other half of Milan? We had Vieri Capretta at this game in Liguria. Milan beat Genoa 2-0 away from home. It wasn't quite as comfortable as that, though. I mean, Milan deserved their 3 points, don't get me wrong, but they didn't open the scoring until Fabio Borini in the 72nd minute. What I want to discuss here, Vito, is Andrea Conti. He was forced to come on for his first, what was close to a full game in a long, long time. And he did really well, setting up a goal. And it's not the first assist he has made in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, without going too much into the Coppa Italia game, let's just say that it was a great cross to Cutrone, but... Well, had a shocker of a game for Samp. He cost us the game, and Reina performed miracles. But back to Genoa Milan, it's good that Andrea Conti is back in the team and that he is providing assists, because, you know, there's a good reason why Milan spent the money on him in the first place. He's got incredible pace, and he will contribute to the goals despite the position he plays in. So I think that assist there in the general game is a big plus. The only criticism I'd have about that goal to Borini is who on earth was marking Borini? The Genoa defence were all at sea.
Genoa should be worried, right? Because
of course,
Piontek scores an insane proportion of their goals. It's far more than 50%, I think, right? He scored 13 goals, they've got 25. So it's just more than 50% of their goals this season.
And they're only 6 points off relegation.
Absolutely. They're going to struggle. They are in a lot of trouble once Piontek signs for Milan. And it's hard to see anyone else stepping in and getting the goals that he has been scoring. Kouame is a great player. He has the ability to become a great player. He's promising. He's exciting. He's still very, very raw. And it's hard to see where these goals are going to come from. Would you be surprised, Kev, if Genoa slipped down into the relegation zones?
Well, I would. I'll write in the mid-season review over Christmas that their fans actually would have a season without having to worry about it. Chievo and Frosinone are awful, but you know, the other teams could still launch a fight back. And as soon as they lose Piontek, oh, wow, you know, I'd be worried.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's brave of you to actually, it would be brave to say that they might go down because Bologna are terrible as well. Bologna haven't won in a long, long time. And they've got Sansone and Soriano in there who might help them a little bit, but it's hard to see them doing too much of a turnaround. Vito, I want to speak about Lucas Paqueta, however you say the kid's name. I'm going to have to get used to it because he looks like an absolute delight to watch. And I have a feeling we could have a lot of fun with this guy in Serie A.
He does show some potential, and I reckon he's got a pretty good shot on him. So, yeah, once a couple of those start flying into the net, then I can see more plaudits start coming in.
Next up, we have Roma 3, Torino 2. In what was a pretty impressive win for Roma, we had Alistair McKenzie at the Stadio Olimpico. So I will speak to him now to get his thoughts. Alistair, two of Roma's summer arrivals were on the score sheet in Brian Cristante and Justin Kluivert. It wasn't the easiest integration for them in the capital, but are they beginning to find their roles in this Roma team?
I think with Kluivert, people are kind of waiting for this explosion to happen. He's a very exciting player, clearly. I was quite surprised and impressed at the very first game of the season, really, how many Roma shirts with Kluivert on the back had already been sold. And he obviously came off the bench in that opening game of the season to set up Dzeko for the winning goal. And people are very excited about him. I would say he's not quite found his place in the team yet. He is obviously in a position that's very competitive with Cengiz Under, Stefano Sharawi, Diego Perotti. There's a lot of players he has to get in front of to get a game. But yeah, I think he's made a good impact. He's electric when he's at his best. He had a really good game, I remember, in that crazy 3-2 win over Genoa just before Christmas. But yeah, I think that he deserves time. Obviously, he's a very young player. He is still in his first season. He's 19 years old. So I think with time, he'll develop into the player that everyone's expecting him to. But I'd say for the time being, he's not quite at that found that consistent level of performance yet at Roma. Brian Cristante, though, I think, on the other hand, has started to do that in my mind at the start of the season again. The midfield was a cause of concern for Roma, and Di Francesco was trying various few ways of setting up his midfield. But what he settled on with Cristante being in the two of the 4-2-3-1 alongside the defensive midfielder most of the time, Steven Nzonzi. And I think it took him a while to be playing at a consistently good level in that position, but he has been relatively impressive pretty frequently in my mind, and it looks fairly comfortable there. So I'd say that Cristante does look a lot more settled in this team now than he did at the start of the season.
The win over Torino then was was quite important. Torino have been in a bit of form. They're a difficult team to beat. But Roma got the job done on a game that you kind of get the feeling earlier on in the season they would have collapsed and not come anywhere close to winning it. Could this potentially be a turning point for them?
I doubt many Roma fans will be going home after that game saying that they think they've reached the turning point, especially given that they again managed to throw away a very comfortable position. Now, I suppose the one thing you could say from this game that was different from a few others that have come before, for example, when they led Chievo 2-0 at halftime back in September, Chievo fought back to draw 2-2. But this time, the collapse did come, and the same nervousness was definitely in the stadium. But they did manage to respond to that very quickly, and I think that's something that Di Francesco will be very happy with, is that his team have shown the mental capacity and mental strength to actually be able to react to one of these collapses in a positive way. I think it only took El Shaarawy about 6 minutes after the Torino equaliser to get them back in front, and it would have been very easy for them to feel sorry for themselves at that stage, because I think I'm right in saying Torino scored with their only two shots on target. But yeah, so that was a positive sign for Roma, but I wouldn't go as far as to say it's a turning point, because they have after all thrown away a two-goal lead at a certain point during the match, and I think that mental fragility does continue to plague them.
They did, of course, temporarily at least climb into those Champions League places. But it's just remained so competitive for the fourth and final Champions League place in Serie A. We've got Milan, Roma, even Atalanta, Sampdoria might be involved in that conversation. Then Lazio, of course, as well, will be one of the favourites. Will you be rushing out to put money on Roma to finish in the top four now?
I would not want to place a bet, and I won't be placing a bet on who's finishing in fourth place this season. The reason for that really is just because of all the teams around in the race appear to have the same problem, really, which is inconsistency. And I think Roma are in a good position, perhaps comparatively to the others, in terms of the strength of squad and the form they're in at the moment. And obviously, they're the ones who are right up there as well. But yeah, they have shown inconsistency this season, gone on bad runs of form, as have Lazio, as have Milan. So it's hard to say if this is going to be the turning point, or if they're going to suddenly go on a run and comfortably finish in the top four. They've still got Champions League duties to take care of as well, so that'll be on their minds. They've got Porto in the last 16, which they'll see as being a winnable game and a good draw for them. And after what happened last season, I expect them fully to take that competition very seriously, and perhaps that could have an impact on their league form in some way as well. We'll have to wait and see. So for me, at this stage of the season, I just wouldn't want to put my colours to the mast. I'm going to definitely sit on the fence with this one. I really couldn't say who's going to finish in the last Champions League spot.
And then we will move on to the game I was at, guys, because this is the best game I have seen this season. And I was saying to you before we came on air that it is the first time I've been reporting at a match live, and in response to seeing a goal go in, my head has just dropped to the keyboard of my laptop because I had to rewrite my match report about three times in the space of 15 minutes. And just when I thought I had it done for the final time, Germán Petzela popped up with the game's sixth goal. Kev, even beyond the goals, this game was really good.
Yeah, it was really competitive. You know, I watched I watched it back after the event, if you like, and watched the full game this afternoon. And it was just how competitive it was right from the first whistle. Fiorentina clearly are out to sort of improve on a relatively poor season so far this year, and they're still in touching distance of the European places. But, you know, people were flying into challenges, particularly Fernandez, who got himself sent off.
Right, you've brought him up. Let's discuss him. He was a complete moron on the day. He had a foul before that, and I thought, oh, that was a little bit strong considering where you are on the pitch, given that it's very, very early in the match. And then when he flew into that second one, everyone just knew. The Fiorentina fans in front of the press box were just, their head was in their hands. They knew exactly what was coming. And of course, he was given a second yellow. And I don't really know what he brings to the team, because technically he's not very good. He works a lot, and we know how much Pioli values structure, work rate, and all that. But I think I wrote in my analysis after the game that what he brings in work rate, he lacks in everything else, whether it's passing, shooting, tackling, discipline. He's headless at times. And Vito, can you work out why Pioli keeps selecting him?
It's rather mind-boggling, to be honest, because I don't think he's anything special. And once again, he's an example of why Fiorentina's midfield is their weakness. They've got a promising attack. The defence is quite solid. And although I'm not completely sold on Lafont as a goalkeeper, he has had his moments. The midfield, though, I mean, Vertu, he has his moments, but he's not consistent enough. Maybe it's the position or the role he plays. Gerson, again, very so-so. And Benassi, the main attribute he provides is if he makes those runs from midfield and scores goals. Mm. But at Fernandez, he's the most, let's be frank, useless of the lot. It's evident that Milan Badal has not been replaced properly, and they should have found a much better option than Fernandez, because I think that inconsistent midfield or unbalanced midfield might be a real detriment to their chances of qualifying for Europe.
Vertu is a decent player, right? But it says something that he is by far their best midfielder, because he just shouldn't be for a team that's trying to get into the Europa League. And you hit the nail on the head. Benassi isn't very good either. I don't really know what he does. He scores the odd goal, but that's about it as well. I know Adam Digby's always saying that he can't pass, he can't shoot, he can't tackle. The only thing he does is score 3-4 goals every few months, and everyone says he's great. But he's another who, when he left Torino, I thought it was going to be a good move for him. But he's kind of just been exposed for not quite having the talent that he maybe should have. Kev, we will come to you now. Luis Muriel is back in Serie A. He announced himself to the Artemio Franchi with a double on his debut. Apologised to the Samp fans after both goals. Both were phenomenal goals as well. He ran half the length of the pitch for one and about three quarters the length of the pitch for the other. He's obviously a player who has all of the talent in the world, and on his day he's incredible. But it's just a matter of time before it starts to go wrong for him, isn't it?
I think so. I was quite scathing when they signed him, actually. He's one of these players that will go, hit that purple patch, and then as soon as maybe he gets disinterested, rather than, you know, somebody else comes in. I likened it a little bit, as oddly that they were playing Sam, to Gabbiadini. He seems to go somewhere, have a purple patch, but Gabbiadini's issue always seems to be that the club that he goes to sign another striker, and that puts his nose out of joint. Whereas Muriel seems to just get disinterested with the environment that he's in, and we'll probably see him out there for the final part of the season. Probably score a few goals for Fiorentina, but come next season, he'll probably be in and out of the side, I imagine, and then probably agitate him for a move and disappear to either another Italian club or Spain, wherever he's going to go and pick up a paycheck next.
I think it's a big shout to give him till the end of the season. By the end of March, he'll have his belly on him and he won't be able to run 56 metres with the ball. As good as Muriel was, all of my attention was on another striker on Sunday afternoon, because the soon-to-be 36-year-old Fabio Quagliarella, he turns 36 at the end of this month, Vito, he scored twice. And it was the 10th Serie A game in a row in which he has scored. Last season, he scored 19 goals in Serie A, which was his best career return. This season, he's got 14 already.
We would assume that he'd be able to be breaking that tally and comfortably score 20-plus. And who knows, if he keeps this rate up, or even if he stops at one part of the season and then regains form, it would not be surprising if he even scores over 25. The way the team is set up for him and the way he is even at 36, you know, he takes his chances. He will score the more simple ones, but then he will always score those beauties that just make us feel in awe of him. And, you know, he's up in the Coppa Cannoniere race, so it's an incredible achievement for someone his age, and he's a real difference maker for some.
A quick point on Quagliarella.
Go.
He scores those wonderful strikes like he's done this year against Napoli, but that second against Fiorentina, the strength to hold off the marker, who was really, really tugging at his shirt, was just excellent.
Yeah, that's what you expect from strikers, you know. Sometimes it's not about the flair, and even with him, he showed that, you know, he's smart enough to make the turn, and even at his age, he's still got enough strength to do what he did. So, yeah, that's just how strikers have to be, and he showed that. The only downside for that game was that he missed a reasonably easy chance in the first half.
I think this is harsh to give.
Yeah.
He arrived a little bit too early. The ball was played a little bit too late, and it was smashed in at a difficult
point. Yeah, it was a hard one.
I think it's harsh. I saw him getting criticism for that, and I'm not having it, because it's not an easy chance to convert the way that
came. Oh, no. I think it's more the expectation that it's Quagliarella and the things he can do. So if it was like a young striker or a mediocre striker, you think, yeah, pass was too hard and position wasn't good. But when you see someone like Quagliarella, you think, oh, he'd still find the way to it.
Right.
Still, two goals is still great anyway.
His issue is that he scores goals like that one against Napoli this season. So the bar is higher for him.
Absolutely.
I want to bring your attention to something the listeners might have seen on our Instagram account, that Forza Italian Football, or Twitter, which was Stefano Pioli losing his mind after the game. Marco Giampaolo had said that Quagliarella was as good as Muriel, and people got annoyed because Muriel scored two goals where he ran a long distance. But being there, Quagliarella was equally as impressive. But Pioli went a little bit crazy. He said, Luis Muriel reminds me of Ronaldo. Il fenomeno. You see the same qualities in his game. When I heard it, I just kind of looked around and I was thinking, I've heard that wrong. You know, my Italian isn't very good. I've missed something. He's not said what I think he has said. So I went online, I was looking around to verify it. Yeah, he compared Luis Muriel to the great Ronaldo. Kev, does it even deserve remarking on?
Well, it isn't the first time it's been said. However, it was always about his inability to keep his weight off. I'm pretty sure I've seen it in the past, but never about their footballing qualities.
No, it was crazy. It was really, really crazy. Cheyenne has come into the comments to say that Quagliarella keeps getting better by age, and that Ibrahimovic must have been speaking about Quagliarella when he said, the older I get, the better I get, like a red wine. Yeah, a bit of Ibra love. Let's pretend that was him, Quags. I'm trying to think, what have we got to do next? What game could we possibly be missing?
Do you still want to blow your horn on Duvan Zapata and his heroics?
We'll take a trip down to the province of Lazio then, shall we, where Frosinone just rolled over Atalanta again. That's 9 goals against big Marco Sportiello, who left Atalanta because he was too big for them a couple of years ago. Now he's conceded 9 against Atalanta and he's going to get relegated. But that's not why I'm here. Duvan Zapata. Vito, thank you for the Colombian. Because
yes,
a turgid first few months to the season, where he was a liability at times, he has scored 13 Serie A goals in his last 7 games, 14 in his last 8 altogether, including the Coppa Italia, and he looks unstoppable.
Yeah, he's been absolutely superb for Atalanta. You know, I'm still stunned that Sampdoria got rid of him, because I thought he was pretty good at Samp, but this run of form, I don't think many people would have seen it coming. He just looks so much more mobile now, and adding that to his aerial threat, I mean, it's like he can just score any kind of goal he wants to now. And this is what Atalanta's been missing for the last couple of years under Gasperini, because Petagna did the hard work, he did the stuff with the team, but he wasn't putting the goals in. With this extra avenue to go and Zapata firing these goals in, this is the real difference between Atalanta, you know, sustaining that run for the Europa League or even making a push for the Champions League themselves.
Yeah, so, well,
everything is up for grabs. They've got a good chance.
Absolutely. I've been saying it since November, or I've been saying it since August. But Atalanta now have 44 goals. And given that there were, I think, 6 games in the middle of the season where they didn't score once, that's remarkable. So they've effectively scored 44 goals in 14 matches. It's absolutely incredible. And we said this earlier on in the season that Zapata coming to Atalanta could be a real difference maker because he's able to do the things that Petagna does, but he can score more. And he's now proving that. There were times this season where he wasn't even doing the things that Petagna did. When his confidence was low, he was selfish. He was so desperate to get those goals that he was shooting when Papu, Iličić, Gosens were all in better positions than him. But now it's just working. It's clicking. And hopefully it continues between now and the end of the season because he is a joy to watch. Even from a neutral's perspective, I would imagine he's excellent to watch in that front three with Iličić and Papu just playing to his every need. It's fantastic. But where shall we go? All right, before we finish up, guys, we'll do a quick bit of transfer chat. Oh, I want to talk about Gonzalo Higuain because he's going to Chelsea from Milan. And a lot of people have been saying that he failed at Milan. But Kev, do you think that... has he failed Milan or have Milan kind of failed him in a way?
I think in a way you could say that he's failed Milan from the point of view that I don't think he ever wanted to be there. I think at his age and playing for Juve, he was maybe expecting not necessarily a better offer, but maybe a Champions League club, whether that came from Chelsea in the summer with Sarri going there. But obviously we had the drawn-out Conte departure. And I think some of that frustration came out when Juve played Milan earlier in the season. So I think that's part of the issue because he really should have been an excellent sort of sounding board for Cutrone to work off, if anything. If Milan could have got anything off him this year, is what Cutrone could have learnt from him. But his nose was probably put out of joint by the fact that he was effectively the pre Ronaldo signing, if you like, that was supposed to take them to the promised land of another Champions League. And over the couple of seasons that he was there, he never became that person that made that extra little bit of contribution to see them over the line, really.
It's an interesting point that about him never really wanting to be there. And that is probably in part why everything boiled over at the San Siro earlier this season. But replacing him is, I've forgotten his name, Christoph Piontek. He's going to be going in at Milan. I'm intrigued by this because they've already got Cutrone and now they've got a second young striker, both of whom will need as many minutes as they possibly can to continue their development. Vito, do you think the two of these could just end up getting in each other's way?
I think it is a great case of that happening because they are similar type of strikers. Remains to be seen how Gattuso can make them work together. If it was a different coach, I would say they would come up with a good enough scheme or accommodate them or even train them to work together somehow. But Gattuso, as we've seen throughout, you know, the season or last season and a half, that is a very basic coach. So I don't think he'll be the guy to make them work together.
And lastly, Kev, last question of the pod. Kevin Prince Boateng, the prince has left Reggio Emilia, which means I have no reason to go to Reggio Emilia anymore, so I'm quite happy about that because it's a terrible, terrible place. But the prince, am I the only one that thinks this move makes sense?
Yes. I suppose from one point of view, there's Barcelona haven't got the league wrapped up just yet, but and obviously they're still fighting for the Champions League. I've not seen a lot of him over the last couple of years. You know, he obviously was at Las Palmas, so they clearly have seen him play in La Liga. He gets a lot of media attention, but it shocked me. It was the one thing that kept me interested this afternoon in social media.
It's going to be a short-term fail for them. Valverde has been saying basically since October that he wants another striker, and it's going to be on a temporary basis. So Prince gives you that versatility. He's excellent. Everything Sassuolo did went through him. He's got the ability to play as a front man, as he has done in Reggio Emilia this season. I think he's a really, really good player, and he'll probably go somewhere in the summer and get paid an astronomical amount of money, whether it's in China or the US. But like I said, he was at Las Palmas and he smashed it. And then he was at Eintracht Frankfurt and he helped them win the cup. And then he did really, really well at Sassuolo up until he got that injury, and then it's been kind of hit and miss since. But I really like Prince, and I think he'll do a decent job if he's given enough of a chance at Barcelona.
Big fish in the pond.
Yeah, there's potentially something in that, but when was the last time he was afforded a real chance in a big pond? Probably Milan in his first spell there, and he was all right for the most part. When he was playing with good players, when he had Ibrahimovic alongside him, he was very, very good. He'll be at Barcelona with really elite players, so I could see it working. When he went back the second time, it was a bit of a mess, but Sid Lowe did an excellent interview with Prince, actually, while he was at Las Palmas. And it struck me just how much he matured, because obviously when he was younger, he was mad. An interview went up on Marca, actually, when was it? 2-3 years ago. And it was doing the rounds again today, obviously, with him going back. And he was speaking about how he was so immature as a youngster, but he had learned how to handle everything a lot better as he got older. And my big regret is that I never got to speak to him while he was here. Hopefully they'll make a return. Maybe they'll go to Parma or Atalanta or something in the summer. Who knows? Guys, we've done it. Thank you very much. The first podcast of 2019. It's great to be back. Vito, thank you for joining us.
Yep. Nah, it was all good, Connor. Yeah, and glad that I was healthy enough to speak on today.
Perfect. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you again. Kev, it's been good.
My pleasure as always.
Jose asks, what do we think of Zaniolo? Well, to answer that question, Jose, I will direct you to ForzaItalianFootball.com, where tomorrow morning this guy Vito Doria's feature on Zaniolo and the deal that took him to Rome and sent Nainggolan the other way is discussed. So you can read that and you'll find out our thoughts on Zaniolo, because what Vito says we think. All right. So for all of your Serie A coverage, of course, head over to ForzaItalianFootball.com. Go to the Instagram at ForzaItalianFootball. We've been smashing it with stories, feed posts, everything from the stadiums. Get us on Twitter at Serie A FFC and Facebook at ForzaItalianFootball. You really don't need any other website for your Italian football fix. Okay. All there is for me to say until next week. Oh, I just realized. I'm going to Milan, Napoli and Torino Inter next week. It's going to be fantastic. All right, guys. Really, that's it. So all that's left for me to say is ciao for now.
Garrisca vento il lavaro viola sui campi della sfida del valore. La speranza viva ci consola, abbiamo 11 atleti e un solo cuore.
Oh Fiorentina, di ogni squadra ti vogliamo regina. Oh Fiorentina, combatto dunque a vita con viola, lotta con vigore per essere tifosi.
Firenze vanto e gloria, sul tuo vessillo scrivi forza e cuore, e nostra sarà sempre la vittoria.
Oh Fiorentina, di ogni squadra ti voglia regina. Oh Fiorentina, combatti ovunque vita con
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.